Aravex. Ordinarily, General Courier would have felt annoyed that most of her dance partners had bugged out for another dogfight several miles away, but this time she had to admit that her hands were quite full enough with Cyclonus, and she didn't really miss the Blue Jets. After a few minutes of full-on combat, in which she'd been much too busy to keep track of her erstwhile wingman, Terror had reached a couple of conclusions. One of them was that the Cosmo Eagle performed even better in a straight-up dogfight than the engineers at Stonewell Belcom had hoped when they resurrected the old F-15's airframe as the next leap in the Retrotech program. She was an even sweeter ship than the Crusader Double Zeta, which was just about the hottest fixed-config fighter in the WDF's current inventory. Sweet enough that Terror, by long custom a Veritech snob, felt fully at home in this cockpit, taking the Cosmo Eagle head-to-head against anybody in the universe. The other was that Cyclonus was one hell of an anybody to go up against. She'd fought Decepticons before. 8-Ball Squadron had been on point for the relief of Autobot City, and again during the Cybertron invasion of 2026, but had never had the pleasure of opposing Cyclonus before. He hadn't bothered with anybody but squadron leaders in 26, and she still remembered the fury on Griffin's face as one of his Valkyrie's wings had come off, just after he'd nursed it home to the Prometheus after one such clash. "Well, this one's for the boss, then," she thought with a grim smile, tagging one of the Decepticons' vertical tails with a burst from her portside cannon. One thing she rather appreciated about fighting Cyclonus was that he didn't do a lot of talking. Most Decepticons of her experience seemed to think it was obligatory to taunt the organics while they fought, but Cyclonus didn't even get on the comm to react when she shot him. She liked that in an adversary. On the other hand, instead of getting on the comm to bitch about it, he just pulled some impossible-ass maneuver or another and flatlined her starboard shields, which wasn't very sociable either. Cursing, she rolled out to port, dumping energy across to rebalance her shields. Another hit like that, and she could say goodbye to the aft projector on that side. Whatever those weapons of his were, they hit damned hard. With another one of those startling, impossible-looking maneuvers, Cyclonus corrected for her evasion and zeroed in for another pass. With a flash of light and a harsh electric sound, another F-15 appeared out of nowhere off her port quarter, nearly colliding with her before it pulled up and raked Cyclonus with cannon fire. The sudden intervention forced him to sheer off, heading out in a wide arc to the west to recover, which bought Terror and her suddenly acquired wingmate a little time. Another Sky Soldier's face, presumably that of the purple-trimmed black specimen who had just so precipitously arrived, appeared on her center VDU and announced cheerfully, "Well done, brother! Help is at hand! Oh!" He blinked, realizing he wasn't addressing a fellow Sky Soldier, and then said awkwardly, "Hello? Wasn't expecting... Hang on. Skywarp to Thundercracker!" The screen diagonaled off to give space to a second Decepticon jet's robot face. "Go ahead."
"It's a human," Skywarp said, as if on the edge of panic. "What do I do?"
Thundercracker raised an optic arch. "Is he fighting Cyclonus?"
It's a she, I think. And yeah."
The other Decepticon sighed almost imperceptibly and replied, "Then help her. Thundercracker out." Thundercracker disappeared, returning Skywarp's virtual image to full screen, as his real self pulled into formation with Terror's Cosmo Eagle, and the two turned to meet the returning Cyclonus.
"Okay, this'll work," Skywarp said, as if psyching himself up. "Just tell me where you want me to hit him from. We can keep him off balance."
"Be more careful when you teleport," Terror told him. "You nearly crashed into me the first time."
"Oh, that was just because I was porting it near the edge of my range. Up close, my aim's a lot better."
"That's reassuring," said Terror dryly. Skywarp grinned.
"Hey, you can trust this face."
"Okay, here he comes," Terror said, all business. "I'm going to see if I can get him to break right with a cannon pass. When I give the word, you hit him high."
"Ten, roger," Skywarp replied. That's what you human fighter jocks say, ain't it?
Terror caught herself making almost exactly the same tiny sigh as Thundercracker, smiled, and got back to work. Close enough, she said. Go! Pris crouched behind her block of rubble, not even daring to breathe, as Galvatron and Megatron both tried to recover from the blows they'd just taken. At first, she'd also attempted to keep one eye on the duel in front of her and one on the air battle raging above, but it was moving too fast and over too large an area for her to get any decent sense of it from down here, so she tried to put it out of her head and just hope they wouldn't get strafed.
Come on, Megatron, she muttered, wondering if he could hear her. Get up. Get up.
Megatron remained where he was for a moment longer, his optics dim. Then they brightened as his emergency systems came online, and he struggled to his feet. After a glance for his stunned and fallen foe, he turned to recover his fusion cannon. Galvatron rose to his feet, his faceplate twisted with fury. One of the horns of his crown was missing, the whole helmet structure surrounding his face bent and knocked askew by Megatron's blow. Redeploying his hand and breaking into a run, the Herald of Unicron leaped upon Megatron and seized him from behind, roaring,
"I'll tear out your optics for that!"
Megatron abandoned his attempt to recover his weapon and lashed out with a backward elbow instead, breaking Galvatron's grip, then pivoted and put all he had into a punch that could have felled a combiner. It staggered Galvatron. He stumbled back, catching a heel on a chunk of wreckage and nearly falling, then lunged forward, stabilizing himself, and lowered his remaining shoulder cannon into position. Already committed to his follow-up lunge, Megatron had no choice but to take the blast and hope his armor would hold. But Galvatron wasn't aiming for his chest. The particle cannon bolt caught him full in the face, sending him flying backward to crash down on his back and skid, sparking and smoking, a full 100 yards. He got to his feet quickly enough, but stood unsteadily, his hand clapped to his face, smoke pouring from beneath, and gave an anguished roar.
"Coward!"
he bellowed, his free hand outspread before him as if searching for something in the dark.
"Is this Unicron's way?"
"Unicron cares nothing for the petty posturings of Primus's children," Galvatron replied, calmly taking aim. "In the end, you're all doomed anyway. You should thank me for attending to you personally. Now hold still. You've been a worthy adversary, so I'll try to make this as quick as I can, if you don't squirm too much."
Without really thinking about the possible consequences, Pris bolted up from her hiding place, scrambled up the jagged side of the block she'd been using as cover, and opened fire, pumping round after round from her DC-17S at Galvatron's face. For all that it was no ordinary blaster pistol, having been modified by one of the galaxy's foremost experts in increasing the power of small arms, it was still no better than a laser pointer against the Herald of Unicron's armor. But, she figured, she might get lucky and put one of his eyes out. Galvatron seemed first taken aback, then amused. He turned slightly so that his weapon trained toward her rather than Megatron.
"You flesh creatures are so bold," he said admiringly. "Stupid," he added, "but bold. My dread lord may condescend to consume your homeworld as well when he has done with Cybertron. I'm told there are some quite delicious energy reserves there. Of course, you won't be there to see that, but you may wish to reflect upon the thought as you take it with you to
That last was occasioned by Megatron, who had followed the sound of his foe's voice, plowing into him with a full-on shoulder charge, sending him skidding back toward the spot where their duel had first begun. At close range, the Decepticon leader's blindness wasn't that much of a disadvantage. His hands could still grasp, his fists still strike. He bore down relentlessly, smashing away at anything he could reach, hoping to put Galvatron's other cannon out of commission.
"Enough!"
Galvatron roared, catching first one, then the other of Megatron's arms and trapping them with his own. For a moment they stood face to face, Galvatron's warped into a fiercely triumphant sneer,
Megatron's a melted ruin from the bridge of his nose upward, the lower half set in a furious, determined snarl. Galvatron braced himself to shove the Decepticon away, far enough back to bring his weapon to bear and end this farce once and for all, and said, "Proceed on your way to oblivion."
"I told you before," Megatron rasped. "Never."
So saying, he headbutted Galvatron in the face with the brow ridge of his casque helmet, sending the Herald of Unicron reeling, then swung himself into a spinning kick that leveled Galvatron outright and collapsed the ruins of still another massive building atop him. Terror and Skywarp took a couple of tries before they really hit their stride, but presently she found that Skywarp, though not a terribly original thinker, took direction well, and he might not have creativity, but he did have intuition. Before long, they were giving Cyclonus fits, Terror using all her Cosmo Eagle's superior speed and acceleration to keep ahead of his firepower, while Skywarp popped in and out, making slashing passes and keeping the purple-armored warrior always slightly off balance. "If we could get a couple more cons to join this party, we might get someplace," Terror thought. And then, "What the hell happened to Starscream?" At that moment, something seemed to get Cyclonus' attention. He aborted a pass against Skywarp, headed away for a few seconds, then turned back and bore down on the Decepticon again, guns blazing. Skywarp was so startled by this sudden double turnaround that he was caught flat-footed, and before he could teleport away, he'd taken several savage hits, the last of which sent him spiraling groundward with black smoke pouring from his starboard engine.
"Skywarp!" Terror cried.
Skywarp replied, plowing through a couple of buildings and coming to rest halfway across a causeway.
"Medic!"
Terror scanned her surroundings. Nobody else in sight. All the other Decepticons were still busy with Cyclonus's pals. Starscream was nowhere to be seen. She had a panel full of flashing low ammo indicators and a shield array running at about 30% efficiency, and her dance partner seemed to have just acquired a major B in his helmet about something. He was a few miles out, having taken the long way around to make sure Skywarp went down, but he was coming like a freight train, and wherever he was headed, it was on the other side of her. She tightened her straps and muttered to herself for about the millionth time in her career, "You could have gone home in 92. Then throttled up for a head-on, zero-deflection pass, intending to throw everything she had left in the shop at Cyclonus's forward shields and see which one of them burned. Just then, Starscream's face, different, configured like a regular Sky Soldier now, but instantly recognizable, appeared on her VDU.
"Excuse my tardy arrival, General, but Scourge gave me a bit more trouble than I was expecting."
He blinked in consternation.
"Oh dear. Were you about to mount a suicidal frontal assault on Cyclonus with those puny weapons? That won't do." "Oh, you should know, I've never tried this before. It may get a little bumpy. Or it may not work at all."
Then, grinning, he shrugged and added,
"But we're no worse off if that's the case. Hold on tight."
Terror said as, with a sudden fizzling crackle like a high-tension line parting in a storm, her Cosmo Eagle suddenly went completely haywire. Gauges shot to the tops of their scales, wavered there, then bottomed out as the panel lights blazed above full intensity, and then went out. The engines faltered, sputtered, and then changed to a whole different pitch as they roared back, stronger than ever. All around her, the structure of the airframe seemed to shiver, as if she were exceeding VMAX. And then the Cosmo Eagle transformed. Terror felt an instant of vertigo, and a half-instant of her namesake, as she thought the aircraft was coming apart, until she realized that her seat was still firmly anchored, the structure around it still whole, and she wasn't, in fact, hurtling through the air at the center of a cloud of disjoined metal debris. The controls and displays had all reoriented around her, just as they would have in a Veritech fighter, leaving her sitting upright in the cockpit blister where before she had been, in the normal scheme of things, horizontal. But the SF-15D was not a Veritech fighter.
"Phew," said Starscream on the monitor, shaking his head. "Well, that worked."
Terror stared at him.
What? How did you do that?
Starscream shrugged, both on screen and around her.
I've no idea. Didn't know I could. Would have saved me a lot of hassle over the years if I had, he added with a wink. This aircraft is a prototype,
Terror sputtered, knowing she was talking nonsense, but unable for the moment to stop herself.
Irreplaceable! And very stylish. My congratulations to your engineers,
Starscream replied.
No time to argue about it now. Here comes Cyclonus. Are you sitting comfortably?
He smiled coldly, the coldness she realized for his so-called fellow Decepticon, not her.
Then we'll begin.
So saying, he returned to fighter mode and opened his throttles wide, surging even more powerfully into combat than the Eagle had before he'd moved in. Terror just sat there, her mind racing to process all that had just happened, as Starscream and Cyclonus took a couple of passes at each other. Then Starscream appeared on the screen again and said,
Well, don't just sit there. Bear a hand. Those controls aren't just for show.
Terror blinked at him. Sighing, he went on patiently,
You're supposed to be a great fighter pilot. I'm a great fighter. Let's get to work!
Terror took 1 second to work her way through the remaining shock, then grinned, put her feet back on the rudder pedals, and took hold of the controls. Our intel files from O5 said you were a big ol' coward, she observed. Why aren't we running like hell? Not that I'm complaining.
That was then, this is now. Work to do, Starscream replied distractedly.
Then, with a hint of petulance,
I wish you had a proper neural interface.
Smirking, Terror said, I don't need one, man. Starscream eyed her.
Prove it,
he challenged. Terror grinned.
Oh, it is on, she said,
and together the two aces settled down to work. When the dust settled, Pris could see parts of Galvatron protruding above the small sea of rubble that had settled above him. One of his hands could be seen, its fingers frozen as if grasping for something. It was utterly motionless, which was perhaps not surprising when the girder that had transfixed the herald through the upper chest was taken into account. Silence, but for the distant sounds of the ongoing air battle, fell. Pris observed Galvatron's still hand for a moment longer, scratched her head, and said,
So, is that it, then?
The words were hardly out of her mouth, instantly regretted, when something happened. For a second, she thought it was just something inside Galvatron's carcass cooking off, as a sort of creeping fire seemed to consume his remains from within, disintegrating much of the rubble that made up his tomb. It collapsed inward, and then Galvatron heaved himself up, the impaling girder melting away, as his remains seemed to burn from within. The impact had smashed his body, wrecking his other cannon and snapping the other horn from his crest, and the collapse of the building had pierced and broken him in a dozen places. From all the cracks and gaps in his armor and all of his joints, that same silent, unnatural fire could be seen seeping and flickering. It was quite the most disturbing thing Pris could ever remember seeing. Turning his optics, now empty pits of that same fire, toward Megatron, he spoke. His voice was still essentially the same, but it had acquired an undertone, a cold and hollow echo, and its cadence and diction were entirely different as he said,
Foolish child of Primus, this shell is but a tool. I have many others.
Megatron would have stared if he'd had working optics. As it was, he took a half step back, shock plain on the half of his face that still worked. He knew that slow, deliberate way of speaking, knew it of old, and even though he'd been told of its owner's return, some part of his spark hadn't quite believed it, until he heard this empty, burning revenant speak with its master's voice.
Unicron, he whispered.
Then, in a louder voice, he commanded,
Run, human! Run!
Before Pris could reply, the thing that had been Galvatron launched itself at Megatron, seizing the battered, blinded Decepticon leader and hurled him bodily across the street, where he fetched up against the block of rubble Pris was standing on, hard enough that it almost knocked her from her perch. She half knelt for a more stable firing position, peppering the oncoming harbinger of Unicron with an even more furious volley of blaster fire, but it ignored them like a man in power armor would ignore rain, striding toward them with an implacable hatred literally glowing on its face. "Getting involved in this was suicide," Pris said to herself. "What the fuck did you think you were doing?" Then she glanced to her side, saw Megatron once again hauling himself to his feet, and smiled. "Elementary history, my dear Agent Morgan," she replied to herself, and then cried aloud, "Megatron! Transform!" The half of Megatron's face that could still scowl, scowled. "What?" he replied. "Transform!" Pris roared. Shoving her sidearm into its holster, she demanded at the top of her voice, "Damn you! Do you want to die here? You have to trust me!" Megatron weighed his options and did something he never, in 6 million years, thought he would ever do. He entrusted himself to a human being. Pris saw the process beginning, the mass displacement sequence accompanied, as she'd seen it in the historical hollows, by a flashing, sparking energy discharge. A momentary panic crossed her mind. Suppose Megatron was too seriously damaged to transform, then what the hell was she going to do? But even as she thought it, she saw it was working. So did the Harbinger. It redirected the first blow it launched upon reaching melee range, intending to bring its fist down on the tiny organic before she could complete her audacious play. But Pris was already moving, breaking to the right, running for the end of the rubble block. The impact of the Harbinger's blow heaved the far end of the block upward, hurling her into the air. She twisted in mid-flight, reaching out. Her mind raced as she called on her acrobatic training to shape her fall, so that she would both intercept her target and not break her neck when she reached the ground. Her left hand closed around Megatron's grip a half second before she landed hard on the metal plate pavement, the breath gushing explosively from her lungs. Something twinged in her right shoulder, but she ignored it, rolling through a standard drill her mother had gone over with her a million times. Dive, roll, up, take aim, pivoting to face the Harbinger as the remains of her cover shattered under its fist, raising Megatron in a two-handed grip. Some part of her noticed that he was heavier than he looked as she sighted across the open iron sights at the Harbinger, who was now turning to face her. Megatron's front sight, indeed the first half-inch or so of his barrel, was missing, but at this range, with a target this big, that wasn't much of a concern. As Pris took aim, the cybernetic induction pad built into the second joint of her index finger touched Megatron's trigger face. She was surprised to feel a fizz of sensory static as something in the Decepticon leader linked to her neuroprocessor's smart gun interface. Now the lack of a front sight was even less of a problem. He might not be able to see, but he apparently still had something akin to smart gun radar. Satisfactory. Her first snapshot took the Harbinger high in the chest, just to the right of the remains of the Decepticon symbol embossed there. The analytical part of Pris's mind wondered why it was there. Galvatron wasn't a Decepticon, wasn't even pretending to be one as his predecessor had done. She wondered whether Unicron had just added it out of force of habit, forgot to delete it from the CAD file when he'd stamped out the new model. The thought, even in this dire situation, made her smile as she jumped out of the path of an attempted stomping and fired again. Megatron's pistol mode packed more punch than her Dece, that much was plain. She could crater the Harbinger's armor, even penetrate it with a lucky enough shot, but it was still like shooting at a buffalo with a .22 rifle. She'd have to chip away at it all day to bring the monster down like this, if it was even possible, and she didn't have all day. "Can you give me more power?" she asked as she ran with all the speed she could muster up a side street, away from the sight of the battle.
"I don't know," Megatron replied. Possibly one shot. But my discharge attenuators are gone. The blast will be wild, uncontrollable. You may be caught in the backlash.
Well, we don't have a ton of options, Pris replied, skidding around a corner. Behind her, the Harbinger ignored all obstacles, simply smashing through the buildings and taking the most direct route in pursuit. Galvatron, by this time, would have been ranting about the terrible punishments he was going to inflict on the human germ when he caught her. The Harbinger made no comment at all.
I need time, Megatron said. As much as you can get me. In the meantime, try to make your way north. My forces are there, if they haven't been entangled in their own battle by now.
Above, the air warriors of forces red and blue were gaining ground against the sweeps and the anomalous blue fighters that had joined them. Enough so that a few of them had the processing cycles to spare on a quick scan of the ground and realized that something was going on down there. Hey, where's Megatron? Sideslip wondered. Megatron can take care of himself, Slipstream replied, wiping a blue jet off her Wingman 6 with a pair of Hydra multi-warhead missiles. How about we pay a little more attention to saving our own tailpipes? Pris rounded another corner, trying to remember how many more of these largely identical abandoned res blocks she had to get past before she'd reach the blue camp, and, she hoped, the Combaticons, when she came up instead against a blind wall.
Fuck, she said.
Turning, she saw the Harbinger bash its way through a wall, shake off the rubble, and turn to look for her. Spotting her, it turned to begin stalking toward her. With a momentary pulse of horror, she saw that its face had mostly burned away from within now, revealing nothing but a dark emptiness limned by Unicron's reanimating fire and the empty frame of one optic.
Okay, it's now or never, she said, holding the cool side of Megatron's slide against her cheek, the broken stub of his barrel pointing skyward and a little off to the right.
We're cornered, and here he comes.
Let him get close, Megatron replied. As close as you dare. Aim for his center of mass, and then protect your optics as best you can.
Roger that. Pris forced herself to stand pat, watching the faceless Harbinger of Unicron approach. And then, when she absolutely dared not delay any longer, she braced her back against the wall and raised Megatron into firing position, aiming his truncated barrel bang at the false Decepticon brand in the center of its chest.
"Give me everything you got!"
she cried at the top of her lungs, her eyes going completely black as she kicked her bionic flash compensators to full intensity and fired. The bolt of energy that raved from Megatron's jagged barrel bloomed instantly to more than the Harbinger's full height and diameter, blasting a trench in the ground in front of Pris, shearing off whole slabs of the buildings on either side of the dead-end street, and engulfing the Harbinger so that its silhouette was completely lost within the brilliance. The sound it made would have been beyond Pris's comprehension if her oral implants hadn't momentarily deafened her outright in defensive reaction. The flash made even the explosion of Megatron's opening shot in the duel seem tame, and it was picked up by cameras in orbit and as far away as the Tower of Pion, since at the same instant the Harbinger's final destruction cancelled the pall of silence that had fallen over Erevex. Half a second later, nothing remained of the Harbinger, or indeed of that little bit of Erevex, but smoke, dust, and an eerie silence.
Did we get him? Megatron asked.
Pris held Megatron, smoking barrel skyward in her left hand, wiping the sweat from her forehead with her right sleeve, and grinned.
Oh yeah, she replied. We got him.
He's bugging out, Terror observed as Cyclonus broke off and headed for orbit as fast as his thrusters could drive him. Should we chase him?
Better not,
Starscream replied with evident regret.
They're probably going to need our help picking up the pieces down below.
Down below, Thundercracker was already on the ground, intent on picking up one of the bigger pieces. Megatron! He shouted, standing at the end of the smoking scar in the ground which was all that remained of Unicron's Harbinger. This was surely the work of Megatron. He had seen its like many times before, But where was his commander now? Megatron, where are you?
I'm here, Thundercracker,
Megatron's voice replied. It took Thundercracker a moment to realize that it was coming from the human who stood at the far end of the blast furrow, and that she held Megatron's weapon form in her hand. The Seeker hurried over, kneeling by her side.
Sir, you're damaged, Thundercracker said, seeing the jagged stub of Megatron's gun barrel and, obvious even at this much reduced scale, the cracks and burns in his plating.
Ha! You ought to see the other guy, Pris joked, riding the post-combat adrenaline surf. We had to kill him twice, she added, gesturing to the furrow. Thundercracker looked bemused. He'd never really known how to talk to humans at the best of times, and this was clearly not the best of times. After considering a couple of different courses of action, he settled on saying a bit lamely, I'm sorry, you are?
I owe this brave human my continued functionality, Megatron informed him. Without her to take control of the situation after Galvatron blinded me, I wouldn't be talking to you now.
Thundercracker drew back in shock.
Galvatron! He blurted.
This brave human has a name, you know, Pris remarked. She even told you what it is.
Did you say Galvatron? Thundercracker asked.
Megatron said archly,
You are to consider, Pris Morgan, how long it has been since I had occasion to address a human by name.
Uh-huh, said Pris skeptically.
Excuse me, Thundercracker broke in with a strange mix of deference and annoyance. Galvatron?
I'm afraid so, said Megatron. Take us to Vilnicron, Thundercracker. I require more extensive repairs than can be accomplished here.
Autobot Comsen, Iacon. The chaos in Comsen had amped up by at least 10 degrees when the comm blackout in Erevex lifted and everyone started trying to get status reports at once. But even through all the noise and the echoing cocoon of her own misery, Alexis heard Starscream's voice.
Starscream to Soundwave.
She whirled, looking up at the screen above the Decepticon comm officer's station as he replied,
Go ahead, Starscream.
The situation here seems to be under control, said Starscream,
and yes, there was his face on the screen. Different, she saw, undamaged, with the same little I'm-up-to-something smile she remembered of old.
Skywarp is down and needs medical attention at these coordinates. Cyclonus and the surviving sweeps have withdrawn. Scourge is destroyed.
Acknowledged. Good work, Starscream.
Soundwave tilted his head, listening to an internal transmission, then added,
Megatron requires that you attend him in the Vilnicron Infirmary soonest.
You may inform his lordship that I shall be delighted, Starscream replied. I may need to drop General Courier and Iacon first, though.
Terror appeared in a diagonal offset window. Is Vilnicron where I go to present my bill for the F-15 you just stole? She asked with a sardonic grin.
Probably,
Starscream said cheerfully.
Starscream!
Alexis called, moving to the rail, not sure whether to be relieved or furious.
Hello,
he said, then peered closer.
You've been... Oh, dear. I'm sorry. I must have scared you to death with my little stunt with Scourge. Come to Vilnicron. I'll explain.
He looked thoughtful.
No, there's too much. I'll sum up.
She laughed in spite of herself, wiped at her eyes, and said, I'll be there. Rumble and Frenzy looked at each other as she left the room, nearly skipping. What was that all about? Rumble wondered. Frenzy shrugged. Dames, who gets 'em? Decepticon Central Infirmary, Vilnicron. There was already a fairly sizable contingent of Decepticons waiting in the outer courtyard of the Central Infirmary by the time Thundercracker arrived, though how they could possibly have beaten him there he couldn't have said. They stood in loose ranks, staring as Thundercracker landed in jet mode,
rolled to a stop and raised his canopy to let the human female disembark. She was still carrying Megatron, holding his battered weapon form in her hand almost as if it were a talisman of some kind. Thundercracker was troubled as he transformed and followed the human through the impromptu and completely unintentional honor guard to the infirmary's main entrance, but he kept his worries to himself. On the way up, Megatron had given him as complete a debriefing as any badly wounded transformer hovering on the periphery of stasis lock could have managed. What he'd had to say was most alarming. Not just that Galvatron had somehow returned from the dead, that kind of thing was almost getting to be de rigueur around here. But what Galvatron had told Megatron before the fight had broken out. Unicron returning? Could that really be true? For her part, Pris was still too jazzed from the fight to give that the consideration it probably deserved. And anyway, the Unicron incident had happened 4 centuries before she was born. The horror wasn't a real living thing to her as it was for someone like Thundercracker, who had seen the all-consuming inaction before and knew what he was capable of. Instead of dwelling on Galvatron's remarks, or his bizarre rebirth, she looked around herself, taking in unfamiliar sights. Vilnicron was as different from Iacon as, say, Eleanor City was from New Avalon, or cities in different countries on old Earth. She didn't know why that should surprise her, but she found that it did. Vilnicron seemed more ancient somehow than Iacon did, perhaps because it had been sealed off and abandoned for so many eons before the Decepticons' return. Its architecture was more imposing, more looming. Its towers and ramparts rendered in a slab-sided, brutally efficient style that put her in mind, insofar as it put her in mind of any place else in the universe, of Cardassia Prime. There was that same sense of a society given over entirely to military excellence, with little time or inclination left for embellishment. In the lobby of the central infirmary, they were met by the first female Decepticon Pris had ever knowingly seen, a slim and severely pretty specimen with features suggesting an Autobot-like alternate mode and a color scheme leaning primarily toward surgical green. She folded her arms and regarded the new arrivals with faint, resigned asperity. "You just had to have a live fire exercise," she said. "Not now, Kitbash," Thundercracker told her. Kitbash sighed. "That should be in my personnel file. Not now, Kitbash." She half knelt, closed one optic, and extended the other to examine Megatron more closely. She regarded what parts of the damage she could see with a critical air, then retracted her optic and said without rancor, "You're going to have to let go now, human. I can't examine him properly with your little pink fist in the way." Pris blinked. Sorry. Ready, Megatron?"
"We'll find out," Megatron replied. "Stand clear."
Pris nodded. "In 3, 2, 1, go," she said, then released her grip and sprang back. Megatron did make it back to robot mode, but it looked painful even to Pris's unpracticed eye, and Kitbash's grumpy facade visibly cracked as she watched her leader struggle through a sparking, grinding transformation, then fall to one knee, internal fluids leaking from a dozen damaged places. She covered up her dismay by grumbling about the mess on her nice clean floor, but that couldn't mask the compassion on her face or in her voice as she went to his side and helped him to his feet. She muttered, "Look at you. Just like old times, eh? Come on, lean on me. I've got a bunch of work to do before I can even send you into CR.
"Wait," Megatron told her. "Thundercracker, are you here?"
"Here, sir."
"You and Onslaught are to report to me here in 1 hour. I need to know as much as you can learn in that time about what happened in Aravex while I was otherwise occupied."
Thundercracker nodded. "As you command, Megatron." Pris stayed as close as she could and still be out of the way while Kitbash worked, patching the most important leaks and fractures. The Decepticon surgeon, once satisfied that her human observer had enough sense to stay out from underfoot, ignored her, working in an intense silence. It took perhaps half an hour for Kitbash to finish stabilizing Megatron to her satisfaction. The Decepticon leader reclined on a monitor couch, his plating crisscrossed with bright yellow strips of Duraplast emergency patch, connected to a suite of status monitors and an energon infuser with a clutch of cables and a couple of faintly glowing tubes. He was still blind, his upper face encircled by one of the Duraplast bands, but he seemed much more comfortable. "There," said Kitbash, adjusting one last setting on the energon infuser. "Couple hours of this, you should be stable enough for me to put you in a CR chamber and get started on the major reconstruction work. And believe me, there's a lot of reconstruction work. Do you want the complete parts list?"
"No, thank you," Megatron replied dryly. "Just a time estimate."
Kitbash sighed.
"Typical. No appreciation for what I'm up against. Just worried about how long it'll take. Well, Supreme Commander, in the state you're in, you should have a solid 48 hours in a CR chamber. 72 would be better. So naturally, that means you're about to say..."
"No more than 12.
"You are the worst patient in the history of medical care."
Pris partially suppressed a snort. Kitbash glanced at her and, unexpectedly, winked, then turned back to her patient and went on, "But have it your way. 12 hours it is. Don't blame me if your face doesn't come out quite as pretty as you're used to." Megatron emitted a dry chuckle.
"So noted," he replied, then addressed the room in general. "Pris Morgan, are you still here?"
"Right here," said Pris, faintly surprised.
"Come here," Megatron said, extending a hand toward the sound of her voice.
He couldn't reach the floor from where he lay, and unlike Iacon, Vilnicron was built with no allowances made for human-sized lifeforms, so there was no mid-level catwalk as there was in so many rooms of the Autobot capital. Pris crossed the room and stood looking up at him for a moment at a loss, then turned to Kitbash and shrugged. Kitbash clearly didn't know what Megatron had in mind either, but, returning the shrug, she knelt and allowed the human to step onto her hand. There was just about room for Pris to stand there and be lifted gingerly up until she could step across to Megatron's much larger hand. From there, Megatron conveyed her to his right shoulder, where his armor was flat enough to make for a fairly decent place to sit.
"Not that I'm objecting exactly, but what are you doing?" she asked.
"I believe your people call it making a statement," Megatron replied. "Kitbash, I need to speak to a few people before I begin the CR process."
If he expected Kitbash to object that he should be resting, Megatron had misjudged her. She simply said, "Well, don't get too worked up. I don't want to repatch those oil lines," and went out to the lobby to start managing the crowd. The first two to enter were the leaders of the war game teams, reporting as he'd ordered them to before the repairs began. Neither seemed to react to the presence of the human on Megatron's shoulder. Thundercracker had suspected as much when he'd carried them up here, and Onslaught was just too professional to let it ruffle him. Megatron himself said nothing about it, letting Pris's presence speak for itself as he ordered,
"Thundercracker, Onslaught, report."
"The surviving hostiles have fled the district," Thundercracker reported. "Pursuit was unsuccessful. Sideslip and Slipstream came the closest of anybody to catching them. They think Cyclonus and the others have left the planet altogether." "There are no signs of any non-aligned ground forces within the search area," Onslaught added. "This appears to have been an aerial assault only. The Autobots have been surprisingly cooperative as regards the Aravex perimeter. They seem distracted, particularly their military police. I suspect something else has happened in Autobot-controlled territory today, but it doesn't appear to be related to our incursion."
"Very well. How stands the game?"
Thundercracker and Onslaught glanced at each other. Then the former said hesitantly, "Well, sir, your optics... We thought it best to suspend..."
Nonsense,
Megatron said flatly.
Would you give up if I were disabled or destroyed in real action? Resume your stations. Onslaught, Force Blue is yours. The game will recommence in 1 hour.
As you command, Megatron, both commanders replied. What else was there to say?
I will be out of communication in deep CR until sometime tomorrow morning,
Megatron went on.
If you are in doubt regarding any aspect of the game, consult Soundwave. I intend to observe the endgame myself. Dismissed!
Onslaught and Thundercracker glanced at each other again, could think of nothing more to say, acknowledged their orders once more, and took their leave. Soundwave came next, having hurried over from Iacon. Sylvie was still with him, and she paused in the doorway, surprised to see her partner perched on the battered Decepticon leader's shoulder. Pris gave her a wry little demi-salute, shrugging in a what-can-you-do sort of way. Sylvie just shook her head, silently acknowledging that she might have known something like this would happen. I suppose it stands to reason, she told herself with an inward half-smile. She's been looking for a gun like him her whole life. Soundwave gave a terse report on the strange events in Little Iacon, their lack of apparent correlation with the strange events in Erevex, apart from the timing, and the cooperative investigation he and Blaster had only just begun into the information and communications aspects of both incidents. Megatron listened gravely, not interrupting, and then issued a few instructions for the continuation of the war game.
Finishing the exercise must be our first priority, he concluded. Optimus Prime and his forces can manage the physical aftermath of the Little Iacon incident without our help. But you may continue your investigation. If nothing else, it's a valuable demonstration of our willingness to coexist.
Affirmative,
Soundwave agreed.
Very well. I must address the troops briefly. Put me on all forces visual.
As you command. Attention, all Decepticons. Megatron addresses you.
Stepping back for a slightly wider field of view, Soundwave powered up his holo array in capture mode.
Proceed, Megatron.
Almost all the Decepticons were in Erevex, preparing to resume the games as soon as Onslaught and Thundercracker were back in the district. Now they paused as one, regarding their comm screens. The message was relayed to the Autobot observers in Erevex and back at Autobase Comsen as well. All of them saw Megatron, his plating battered and patched, bands of metaseal entirely obscuring his optic bridge, but his resolve clearly undamaged, and all of them saw the red-headed human woman sitting on his shoulder, too, where no human had ever been permitted to sit before.
"My Decepticons," he said,
his hoarse voice slightly raspier even than usual.
With the usual speed and the typical veracity of rumors in wartime, some of you may have heard by now that I have been assassinated. As you can see, this is very much not the case, though I'd be lying if I said my attacker hadn't given it his best shot.
Decepticon and Autobot listeners alike glanced at each other in surprise. Had Megatron just made a joke?
The interlopers who attacked our war games wore the forms of those so-called Decepticons created by Unicron in the early 21st century,
Megatron went on.
Their leader, who engaged me, appeared, despite what we know of his fate, to be Galvatron.
He paused to let that sink in, then continued,
In the end, this young human, Pris Morgan of the International Police, and I were able to destroy this apparition.
Startled that he'd mentioned her by name live on air, as it were, Pris gave the whole planet Cybertron a bemused little wave. If having been name-checked by the Decepticon commander was a surprise, what he said next was a bigger one, for Megatron went on to declare flatly,
Without her help, I would not have prevailed. In recognition of her bravery and quick thinking, I hereby commission her an officer of the Decepticon forces.
Pris blinked, glanced at his profile, then looked down at Sylvie, who grinned and gave her an exaggeratedly earnest double thumbs up.
This raid by Unicron's creations has significant implications, which we, and the Autobots, must discuss at length once the game is concluded. In the meantime, it is even more critical that we gauge our state of readiness. Force Blue will be under the command of Onslaught for the remainder of the game. That is all.
Megatron nodded to Soundwave, who shut down his holo array and signed off.
That should give them a few things to think about, Megatron mused with slightly dark satisfaction.
They're not the only ones, Pris remarked.
Oh, don't worry, Megatron told her dryly. The duties are largely ceremonial.
Thanks.
Not at all. Soundwave, you may return to Iacon. We'll meet for the post-game debriefing tomorrow.
Acknowledged,
Soundwave replied. Then, with a pause for one last look back and grinning wave, Sylvie followed him out. This concludes Transformers Cybertron Reloaded, issue number 6, Adapt and Survive. Next issue. With Megatron down for repairs and strange things afoot all over Cybertron, it may not be the best time for the Decepticons to finish their war games, but most are determined to finish what they've started. What else lurks in the shadows of Cybertron, and how will it react when escalating tensions within the Decepticon ranks threaten to make the games all too real? Transformers Cybertron Reloaded No. 7, The Future of Ancient History.